Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Piasecki Althaus, hosting Grief Share, a 13-week support group program for adults grieving the death of someone close, running every Wednesday from February 21st through May 16th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. To register, call 262-658-4101.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Racine Theater Guild will have a variety of summer classes running June, July, and August. There are classes for people of all ages and skill sets. For complete details, visit racinetheater.org.
Support for WGTD comes from Lemon Street Gallery. The Introduction to the Potter's Wheel class will take place June 19th, 1 to 3 p.m., and June 26th, 1 to 3 p.m., for young adults 13 and up. Build confidence using a clay studio. Call 262-605-4745 for more.
Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring the market's popcorn vendors, Crane's Kettle Corn, Sandy's Popper and Sky Mountain Kettle Corn. Snack while you shop. The market, back outside for the warm weather season on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Duay, is open from 9 until 2. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning and welcome to WGTD and this, our Saturday morning program, Community Matters. I'm Linda Fleshinsky, the host for this week's edition of Community Matters. If you've been listening to the news of Wisconsin, you have no doubt heard of some of the issues surrounding the Oak Creek Power Plant and the concerns regarding the impact of the coal burning at this plant. Are you aware of the health repercussions for people in that area and beyond of the burning of coal? Are you aware of the significant air quality concerns in southeastern Wisconsin? Do you wonder about what alternative energy sources might be available and why the Oak Creek Power Plant has not been converted to coal gasification or to any of the clean, renewable energy options? Do you wish you could have an impact on this concern? Today, to discuss these questions and more, we have with us four members of the Clean Power Coalition of Southeastern Wisconsin. With us are Miranda Ehrlich, who is the community organizer of the Sierra Club and a representative to the Coal Coalition, Charles Mickna, Frank Mickna, and Professor Carl Lindner. Welcome to all of you, and thanks very much for joining us. I think we'll start with you, Miranda. I'd like to begin for our listeners going back to the beginnings of the coal history here in Oak Creek, and also how the coal burning began and how it got expanded. Could you give our listeners a little background on that?
Absolutely. So one thing that's important to note at the beginning is something a lot of people don't know, but actually there's technically two coal plants on that same property. The original power plant, which is known as South Oak Creek, was built in the 1950s and had four units that were expanded over, or four units, and it was also expanded over time. Units 5, 6, 7, and 8 were built in 1959, 1961, 1965, and 1967, respectively. The first four units of the plant retired in the 1980s, but the last four units are still currently in operation and were retrofitted in the late 2000s with modern pollution controls. The South Oak Creek plant is entirely owned and operated by We Energies. Even with the retrofit, this is a very old plant by coal plant standards. The typical lifespan of a coal plant is about 40 years, and if you look back at the oldest unit currently operating at this plant, it's 59 years old, almost 60 years old. Wow. In addition to retrofitting the old plant, We Energies built a new coal plant on the same property just to the north, which is called the Elm Road Generating Station. Elm Road has two units built in 2010 and 2011, respectively. There was fierce opposition to this new plant being built, especially from local residents and environmental groups. Unfortunately, the project ultimately went forward and was approved by the Public Service Commission. And that newer plant, Elm Road, is actually owned by three utilities. We Energies is the primary owner and operator, but Madison Gas and Electric and WPPI Energy, which are two other utilities in the state, also are part owners.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful summary for our listeners. I well remember many of us going to speak, and in fact, Sam Johnson going to speak against that coal plant, and yet it moved forward, and of course, that was a huge huge disappointment to many of us. What were some of the issues that brought the coalition together, and what groups are part of your coalition, and sort of what has your coalition been doing to try to combat or maybe inform the public?
Yes, absolutely. So I think people in the coalition were motivated by a lot of different issues. All of us are really concerned about coal pollution, whether that's coal dust coming from the piles at the plants, whether it's coal ash, which is the toxic waste byproduct of coal, whether it's what's directly coming out of that smoke, those smokestacks, because despite having quote-unquote modern pollution controls, there really are still some significant pollutants coming out from the burning of coal. You know, you've got the coal trains, you've got the mining process, you've also got support for renewable energy or other kinds of energy. And so I think people in the coalition are motivated by a lot of different things, but what we really come together around is that coal is no longer an acceptable energy source in 2018, and that we need to move beyond it towards renewables. And the coalition first came together around August of 2017, so we're a relatively new group. And I do want to note that it builds on years of activism and work already being done by local residents around the coal plant. As I mentioned before, a lot of environmental groups had long been concerned about the coal plant too, but we weren't all regularly coming together to discuss our concerns and figure out strategy as a group. So the Sierra Club, which I work for, was very interested in getting involved here as part of its Nationwide Beyond Coal campaign. And so I started meeting with folks in the area, and we determined it made sense to form a coalition so we could pool resources and ideas and coordinate as a team. Now, I could read you a long list of all the groups involved. I don't know if you want me to do that, but I could just give you a couple as a quick idea of who we have.
Sure. That sounds good.
Perfect. So, as I mentioned before, the Sierra Club is involved, and that's the group I'm a part of. We also have Eco Justice Center and Racine Dominicans, Wisconsin Interfaith Power and Light, Wisconsin Green Muslims. So we have a number of religious groups involved who are motivated by social and environmental justice. We also have other traditional environmental groups like Moms Clean Air Force, 350 Milwaukee. We also have local community organizations like the Environmental Accountability Group, which was started by a guy named Bill Pringle, who was personally affected by the pollution from these plants and is working to provide testing and monitoring for local residents. And so that's kind of gives you an idea of who all's involved.
That's a great summary. Thank you. And, you know, I've been to a few of your meetings and listening sessions, and that is a really targeted and very impassioned group, I think, who is addressing this. About a month ago, you know, this came into the news because the black dust was found covering homes and cars and yards in Oak Creek. And test results confirmed that it was coal dust. Carl, could you tell our listeners maybe what is it that's so dangerous about coal dust, and why is it that people are so concerned?
Well, coal dust contains heavy toxic metals to which there is no safe level of exposure. And those toxic metals include lead, mercury, and arsenic. And those same heavy metals appear in the coal ash, which is the residue of burned coal. So it's not just the coal dust which scatters around before the coal is burned that is so threatening. That threat continues with the coal ash, which is never effectively stored or safely put away. That coal ash sometimes is spread out over driveways, not driveways, but rather parkways, walkways. Sometimes it's deposited, you know, outside of churches and schools. And when it is buried, there is no safe way to bury it. It does not decompose, and it will leach into the water system. So those same heavy metals in coal dust are there in coal ash, and they don't disappear. And This is something that is gradually coming to be known more clearly by the people in the area as the science gets out, you know, despite the efforts of the toxic, the fossil fuels industry to try to confuse the understanding of this and the threat that coal poses. But coal is dirty from beginning to end. And the effects of it are cumulative. So it doesn't matter whether you are living right next to the plant or 3 miles away or further than that. Those two coal plants, which constitute together the largest coal-burning operation in Wisconsin, are a threat to all the people of southeastern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And the people who don't live immediately in the vicinity are still under danger of it, under siege of it, because even though the amounts that they may be inhaling and taking into their systems, you know, are slightly less than those that the people around the coal plants are ingesting, doesn't merely solve the problem for anybody because the effects are cumulative. It isn't that, you know, you have a bad day breathing it in. Every day you're breathing it in. And so sooner or later, those health hazards, you know, will come home to affect the people who live even not in the immediate area.
You answered that so well, and I'm really glad you talked about the proximity to the coal plant because, you know, I think some people think this is an Oak Creek problem. And we went to a hearing at by the Sierra Club, and they said that people think, you know, there's a 3 mile radius and that's the dangerous part. And you live beyond that 3 mile. I think I live beyond that 3 mile radius, but you know, we know very well that the ash goes much further than that. I think it's just got to be a general concern of all of us who live in southeastern Wisconsin and actually nationally even.
Yes, what I'd like to say is it's not a vicinity problem, it's a breathing problem, mm-hmm. and everybody is breathing.
Yep, and it's not an inconvenience that there's dirt on your car, it's actually a health issue, and that's what we try to get to. So I'm going to move to a couple guys who have lived in that area for many years. Charlie McNiss here with us and has had a long experience. What's your history with that area, and what have you seen that's a concern?
I've lived next to that coal plant all my life, I'm in my 60s now, and I can remember as a child growing up, and depending on the wind, you played in black snow. So that, you know, you'd hear them blow the chutes out at night, and, you know, well, now we fast forward, and basically they claim that they've cleaned everything up, but my residence that I'm at now for the last 30 years is on 7 Mile Road, and I usually get a west wind, so I'm getting all this coal dust on my properties, you know, off the cars. So, you know, they always claim that, well, they can't cover them because of, you know, the internal combustion, that it'll just, you know, start on fire in the car, so they leave everything exposed. You know, you can walk down the tracks and see the coal laying there, and you still kind of have the same thing. You know, fast forward, black snow, you know, as long as you've got a west wind, you know, it's coal dust all over, you know, and like Carla says, you know, I'm just having larger microns that basically are around, and anybody that's further out, they're just breathing in even the finer microns, which is just as bad. Mm-hmm. So.
And have you had health problems in your family?
Yes, we've had health problems right along. None of us have ever smoked in our family, and but all of us have breathing problems. You all have inhalers, or you know, we're on something, and depending on which way that wind is blowing, some days are worse than others. You know, as the people in Oak Creek are finding out, that when we get a southeaster or southwestern wind, you know, that all blows up onto them. You know, when a western wind comes or northeastern, it's down on us. So it all depends on which way Mother Nature is blowing that air around, you know, how you're going to feel that day, whether it's worse or it's not as bad.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie, that was a really good summary. Frank, you live just south of the coal plants, is that right?
Yes.
And I've got a quote that's in one of the brochures by you, which says, enough is enough and we want the coal plant cleaned up. What are some of the things that make you believe that is necessary?
Well, I truly believe it's a health issue. Like you said earlier, that it doesn't matter where you live. As long as you're in southeastern Wisconsin, you're at a hazard of being contaminated by coal. And, you know, everyone in my family and people always talk about, you know, they have a headache and stress levels are high. And you know, after reading some of the you know, what coal causes, that could be, you know, one of the problems. Like, mm-hmm. everybody has, they complain about the headaches and the sinus and everything else. And, you know, some people say it's the lake, but when you have predominant westerly and northerly winds in the wintertime, it's not the lake that's doing it. It's something else.
Some people say that if it's so bad, why don't you just move away? What's your response to that?
My response
question?
Is the McNa family's been here since the middle 1800s. My great-grandfather homesteaded the property what we live on. On one side, we're bordered by Cliffside Park and the Crestview subdivision, and they are good neighbors, and we have a prestige. It's like a nature sanctuary, a park. And then when you go to the west side, there's our other neighbors there. Coal all over the tracks, blowing in the wind. You know, it's the noise at night, the trains idling, diesel. We have good neighbors and we have some bad neighbors.
Mm-hmm. There was a woman who spoke about selling. You know, she got up at one of these hearings and she said, I've had my house on the market for a year now and there hasn't been one single showing. Is that in there also? That, and didn't We Energies buy up some of the properties?
Yes, they bought over 30 properties along 32 that had contaminated wells. And so that takes them off the contaminated list.
And they had to sign? Did they have to sign something that they wouldn't discuss about the issues with the coal burning?
I believe they all had to sign some sort of a waiver, that a disclosure that they wouldn't talk about it.
Well, not only that they didn't talk about it, but I believe in that waiver is that they can't sue them for their health issues.
Mm.
Right.
See, and that's part of that. But like Frank has said, a lot of them couldn't sell their property. So basically, when We Energy comes in and you find coal, you have to disclose that in a sale, and who's going to buy it?
Who's going to buy it? Yeah. The fact that she hadn't even had one showing in a year, I thought, was really shocking. And she would like to move from that area, and I'm sure there are others like that. Miranda, do we have any statistical information that says that health issues are worse in that area?
So the short answer is no. The longer answer is it's actually really, really difficult to have conclusive, statistically significant studies in small areas like around power plants, especially around one specific power plant, just because the number of people, it's not large enough to necessarily draw conclusions. You'd have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on like an academic study to be done. And so unfortunately, we don't have specific scientifically vetted data around the power plant to necessarily say 100% for sure. But what we do have is we have studies that are broader that have been done around coal plants and around coal dust hazards and around all of these things across the United States, which show conclusively that the kinds of things that are being emitted from this plant, so the coal dust, the toxins coming out of the stacks, coal ash, those definitively can cause the kinds of health impacts that we are seeing in people around the plant. And more anecdotally or in kind of smaller samplings, Denise Lockwood of the Racine County Eye has gone door-to-door and talked with many families and has kind of been keeping track of those people with health impacts that are commonly associated with these toxins, and has found a significant number of people in the area. So while we don't have, you know, a conclusive scientific study about this specific power plant, we do have a lot of scientific research that backs up our claims. And we do have anecdotal and, small samples of evidence to demonstrate that we are, that there is very much reason to be concerned.
Great. Thank you. Kyle.
And even though it's difficult to obtain statistics that can testify to the dangers of coal ash and coal dust in the particular area, as Miranda said, what we have is anecdotal evidence. We have again and again personal testimony from the people who live in the area, and their stories are all the same. This can't simply be coincidence. And the testimony comes from families who have had no previous health issues that are turning up now, you know, in their families. And one of the best examples of it comes from Bill Pringle and his wife, Sarah. They lived in the Oak Creek area for 5 or 6 years, and they were perfectly healthy when they arrived there. And within 5 or 6 years, his wife, Sarah, was on 17 medications, and all of his children were on inhalers. They eventually were able to move away from Oak Creek, and all of those ailments mysteriously disappeared. So this kind of personal testimony repeated again and again, it seems to me, is more valuable than looking at numbers on a page.
Absolutely. It's really a compelling story he tells, and he's been written up in local newspapers, and with all the pills that they used to take and the inhalers they used to use, and they moved away, as Carl said, and they don't have any of those health issues anymore.
Well, like I said, you know, in our family, none of us ever smoked, and mm-hmm. we all have breathing problems. You know, we're on inhalers and different, you know, nebulizers and other things, you know, and depending on which way that wind blows again, you know, how you feel that day. You know, you can wake up one day and you feel like you're in a haze, mm-hmm. you know, and that's because you pretty much have been, let's say, if you know, sleeping at night, you're kind of like a fish out of water. You're gasping for air, you know, and then maybe when you get the wind in the right direction, and then it's not quite as bad.
Mm-hmm. The anecdotal information and sharing is really profound when you talk to people who are there. And also at a listening session, we had Michael Gann spoke. What was his background and what did he share?
Gantz is a doctor that specializes in allergies and breathing and things, and he sees a lot of different things. And when I first went to him, he said, "Geez, did you smoke or do you smoke?" And I was like, "I've never smoked." You know, he's like, "Oh, you got a lot of symptoms of a smoker," and so it took a couple of years for him to straighten me out. I mean, I got a nebulizer and I got the different inhalers and
yeah, there is an increased incidence, apparently, according to him, in this whole area of chronic respiratory illness, and that's what happens. And when he found, you know, that the dust on the cars was coal dust, they had it tested, and they said, you know, it's as dangerous as having as a cigarette smoke, if not more dangerous.
Well, they did come through, too, and found coal in just about all our houses. And when they did the testing, I'm under the belief that they really thought we were exaggerating about this. Mm-hmm. You know, when they found that, they were kind of in shock of that. And, you know, it was larger amounts than I think, significantly larger than what they thought they were going to find anywhere. So, and it's, you can walk around out there after a good west wind anywhere and pretty much, especially during this, you know, after a snowstorm, you can really pick up the particles. You know, you can see them, you know. So that's going to have an effect. And if it has an effect on us locally, you're within 5 miles of that plant. It's going to affect you. Mm-hmm. You know, no doubt about it.
I have a friend who developed lung cancer, never smoked in her life ever. And, you know, you hear these stories and you just wonder how much is our air quality. And our air quality actually in southeastern Wisconsin from Milwaukee all the way and then down to Chicago, that's a whole band of issues with air quality. Who are the most vulnerable groups for consequences from polluted air from the coal plant?
Well, usually, you know, children and, you know, older people, and mm-hmm. I don't know why I sit down and say older people, because now I'm in my 60s, so I'm one of them older people, you know, so mm-hmm. you're kind of talking to some of them here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, it was interesting, there was just a column, Ask the Doctors, you know, in the paper, and someone had written in about, she was in her 80s, and she said, what kind of danger is there to this. And there is a significant danger, and for pregnant women and for children. And unfortunately, I guess the lungs are developing during all the way to the teenage years. So what's the goal, Miranda, of the coalition? What are you ultimately hoping to get to, and why?
So, yes. Mm-hmm. So our coalition mission statement has three main goals, and they're all kind of intertwined. Number one is we want We Energies to immediately address all pollution hazards associated with the plant. So that includes the coal piles, which have been in the media a lot recently, but it also includes pollution from the smokestack, toxic coal ash waste, and dust blow off from coal trains. Number two, we want We Energies to have a plan to phase out coal as soon as possible, including the coal plants at Oak Creek. So they've been getting a lot of media attention lately for retiring other coal plants, which is great. You know, it's great that they're retiring Pleasant Prairie. It's great that they're retiring a coal plant in Green Bay. That does nothing to help people who live around the Oak Creek power plants and are experiencing this pollution every day. So we need We Energies to commit to something bolder and bigger than what they're already committing to. We need them to figure out a plan to phase out coal entirely. And number three, we are promoting renewable energy as an alternative. Renewable energy is becoming cheaper in a lot of places. Wind is becoming cheaper than coal, and not just, you know, in a vacuum. Building new wind energy is often cheaper than operating old coal plants. That's astounding. That's amazing. There's a utility in Iowa that actually is planning to be 100% renewable. Iowa's next door to Wisconsin, right? We can do this if we put our minds to it. And so that's something we're also promoting. We want We Energies to stop standing in the way of renewable energy and to seriously consider that as an alternative to coal.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke, Carl, very impassioned about what at the listening session about why we should be doing this.
Well, I tried to make two arguments to the executives who represented the three coal companies that provide energy to Wisconsin. And the first argument was on the level of just being a human being and being caring and responsible, and especially so considering that the impact of coal on their customers was endangering their health. The other argument I tried to make had to do with business itself, and I tried to tell them that if they were going to make the switch, which was inevitable, it's coming whether they wanted to or not, and the only question is when. And that meant that the only problem was how much money they would lose in making the transition. And I was trying to show them that if they were going to move forward with this as quickly as possible, they would make a fortune off clean energy because the sunlight is available half the day. The wind blows 24 hours a day. You don't have to go looking for it. You don't have to dig it up out of the ground and transport it. It's not unhealthy, quite the contrary. And it is inexhaustible. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to worry about running out of sunlight or wind. And all of this, you know, leads to profits for energy for the foreseeable future if and when they make this transition. And so the only possible reason that they're holding back is that for the sake of short-term profits, they will continue endangering the lives of the people who live anywhere in the neighborhood of these two coal plants. And that neighborhood consists of South Milwaukee, Oak Creek, Caledonia, Racine, and Kenosha. Basically, it's all of southeastern Wisconsin.
That was a wonderful summary. We've talked a lot about the air quality, and I think I always worry about that the most because you can't do anything about the quality of your air except move. There are also concerns, are there not, regarding the soil and also the water in that area. I know there was an issue with molybdenum. Maybe Frank or Charlie, you'd like to speak to that.
Yes, a lot of the wells in the area had high concentrations of molybdenum in or in boron, and a good many of the houses already have been built up and torn down and turned back into farmland. Mm-hmm. So the local municipalities, they lose out on that tax base. So that's kind of a negative effect for us. And
do many people in your area buy the water, buy their drinking water rather than use what's in their taps?
Quite a few do. I do personally. I get Culligan. So
okay.
And ever since my well, I was informed that it could be contaminated, and it was. I've been buying water, and I should have known right away because my dog wouldn't even drink the water.
Do people in your did We Energies offer to provide bottled water for you in that area?
At the beginning, when the wells were found to be contaminated, they did provide the water, and then when it came, all the testing was results came back, and the DNR had said that inconclusively they couldn't determine that it was from We Energies, and that molybdenum and boron are naturally occurring in the earth, that they didn't need to provide water to me anymore.
Besides the water and the soil issue, too, what about our beautiful Lake Michigan? Does it look like there is some impact on our lake?
Well, that's the one thing about Lake Michigan. You know, when We Energies has made these fly ash sites, they basically, I was always under the understanding that they had a holding pond, they were treating the water and putting it back in. Well, that's not quite true. They have a holding pond. The problem is once that pond's full, that water flows directly into the creeks, and then it goes directly into Lake Michigan. And when you have these really heavy-duty torrential rains, and you can't see it from 32, you almost have to go down, like if you're going into the entrance into the gun range, you can see that water just flowing right through that pond. There's nothing holding it. So all that water, and what Carl had mentioned earlier, you know, with the lead, you know, the mercury and the arsenic, mm-hmm. that's flowing straight into that creek and straight into Lake Michigan. I myself am glad that I'm not drinking the water in Racine, Kenosha, Waukegan, anywhere south of that plant, because one day somebody's going to wake up and test that for all those, and they're going to find that there's a high concentrate, I believe, a high concentrate, you know, of arsenic and mercury and lead in the water. They should actually start doing that now. Everybody has to remember that that plant isn't burning at 100% yet. You know, that's right now they're only at about 45%. And every time they shut down a coal plant like Pleasant Prairie or Madison, they just increased the electricity here. So anybody in southeastern Wisconsin in this area, you're paying the price for your with your health for everyone else getting electricity.
Mm-hmm.
See, and nobody thinks about that. Now, when Foxconn comes in, I've heard that they're going to try to kick this up to 70%. So if you think it's bad now, wait till they do that on coal. You know, the other thing we haven't really touched on was the noise of the trains. That is horrible. They're in and out of there every night. I mean, at mm-hmm. times you can hear them slamming into each other miles away. As far as noise pollution, that is another one of the issues that this plant has got. It's just every day. It's every day with them trains. Bang, 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 boom. You know, you sometimes think that there's artillery going off, you know, somewhere nearby. Carl's right. The sooner they start converting this over, you know, natural gas, they could do it. They could do it tomorrow, but they won't.
I hope that so many people in our listening audience will understand the dangers of this to the whole area of Wisconsin and beyond, really. I understand there's also an issue with the transportation of coal. Can one of you speak to how they transport the coal and what the concerns are about that transportation?
Well, Frank? This coal here is transported all the way from, I believe, western Wyoming. So it is traveling across all those states uncovered, and I've read and I've seen data where each coal car can lose up to 500 pounds of coal in the transportation of it. So you figure, you do the math, 135 cars times 500 pounds times two to three crane loads a day, traveling over that distance, they're not just contaminating the area around their plant. They're contaminating all across the United States. And everybody that lives along them tracks, and that coal is blowing on their homes and on their cars, and their little children are playing in the yard. They're the ones that are most susceptible. You know, air pollution triggers asthma attacks in probably 10% of small children.
That's an amazing statistic, and even if it's not 500 pounds per car, it's a significant amount. And again, we're polluting areas way beyond Oak Creek.
Well, one of the other things is when the car's empty, they don't totally empty that car. You always have that fine dust. So it's no different than the back of a pickup truck as you drive down the road and you watch the wind go and swirl it around and pick it up. So they say that the transportation back is just as bad as it is coming. Mm-hmm. You're getting it both ways.
Yeah. We Energies talked about containing that dust by putting a coating over it. How does that work, or does it work?
Basically, it's supposed to be a crustacean that'll keep the dust from blowing around. I don't know enough about it whether or not it works. It could work, I guess, on the cars. The thing that I've seen by living over there is that they've got dozers on there pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. So if they're covering it with a crustacean, my question is this, and you got the dozer pushing it, doesn't the dozer bury the crustacean? And, you know, and so he's churning up new dust, you know, to come up. So I question how well that really works, you know. I mean, I see them spraying, you know, and like the other night at the meeting, they didn't say they were spraying crustacean on there. They said they were spraying it down with water. And again, where does the water end up?
Mm-hmm. Wow. There's an option.
Linda, I can share that really quickly, mm-hmm. if you want.
Yes.
So I think Charlie did a good summary there, but I also think, so the crusting agent, that can only be, my understanding is that can only be used on an inactive coal pile. So if they have like a storage pile that they're not currently using, they can put the crusting agent on top of that, and it does significantly reduce blow off, to my understanding. However, you can't do that on an active coal pile because like they said, you need to be pushing it around, you need to be moving it, and so that's not really a solution here, just because they need to have, if they're going to use coal, if they're going to need a huge pile of coal that they can feed into that plant. And on the train cars, I don't know if they do a crusting agent at the beginning or not, but a concern there is, you know, those cars are traveling hundreds, thousands of miles across the United States, coming from Wyoming, coming from Montana, and by the time they get here, you know, anything that's been sprayed on the top to try to keep the dust in has well been worn off from rain, from wind, all of that. And I will also add, I did quickly Google the statistics about the coal dust blow off, and that is accurate. It can be 500 pounds. I'm even finding things that say it can be more than that. This study from BNSF Railway says it can be as much as a ton of coal, which is about 2,000 pounds that can escape over the course of the travel. And some of that's going to be broad chunks of coal, but a lot of that's also going to be dust.
Miranda, if listeners are wanting to get involved in this issue, what can they do? Who can they contact, and is there a website they can look at?
Yes. So they can go to www.cleanpowerwi.org, and there's a lot more information on that website about the coalition. There's a contact form. If you fill it out and send us an email, it'll go directly to our inbox, and we can send you all the details for our meetings, for other ways to get involved, et cetera. Or you can just email cleanpowercoalition@gmail.com and contact us that way.
Okay. So for our listeners, Clean Power Coalition .org. Is that right?
So the website is cleanpowerwi.org.
Okay.
So Clean Power Wisconsin, basically, cleanpowerwi.org. The email is cleanpowercoalition@gmail.com.
Great. Okay, so cleanpowercoalition@gmail.com or the website www.cleanpowerwiwisconsin.org. And there is a petition. Can you say a little bit about the petition? What is the petition basically asking for?
Yes. So we have a petition out right now that is calling on We Energies and the other utilities that are involved with these plants, because we think it's important that they know they own the pollution impacts here, too. We're asking all three of them to come up with a plan to completely phase out coal in favor of clean energy. We want to see them, you know, figure out how they're going to transition to a type of energy that doesn't hurt people, you know, wind, solar, kinds of energy that we're seeing other utilities across the country already doing.
And it's so cheaper.
In signing that petition. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and it's cheaper, and it creates jobs.
Yes.
Throwing
and it creates jobs. And mm-hmm. that's another thing, too. You know, I think we don't have any coal in Wisconsin. We ship all of that, or we take all of that from way out of state, from Wyoming. You know, those are jobs. If we were producing our own wind turbines, if we had a big solar industry here, you know, those are all jobs that could be right here in Wisconsin. Instead, we're sending money out of state to buy a product that, you know, we don't even have any of it here. So there's really no reason for us to be relying on coal in the 21st century.
One of the things that We Energies promised to is a monitoring and I was very confused by that because I thought monitoring of power plants, especially coal power plants, was just a given. So they're not required to do monitoring? Is that right? Is there monitoring?
Yes and no. So they have, my understanding is that they monitor their smokestacks. So they do have equipment to figure out exactly what is coming out of those stacks and making sure they're meeting Clean Air Act requirements in that way. But what they are not required to do is monitor the ambient air quality around the plant.
Okay.
And so that's all voluntary. And that's the big problem here is that that's missing the coal dust issue, which is a huge contributor mm-hmm. to the air quality problems. So they're not required to do that, but they have now agreed to add an additional monitor north of the plant where all these issues have been coming up recently.
Okay, Charlie's adding something here.
Well, yeah, they did have, remember, a monitor at the Haas Park, you know, for local, and then they pulled it out of there. Mm. And there is one on 7 Mile Road by us, but it's on the west side of the tracks and not on the east side, which basically it should be on the opposite side to pick up the dust that's blowing off the railroad cars. So they've got one there, but they should have it on the east side of the railroad tracks and not on the west side. That would be inappropriate. And then they should be putting one again back by Haas Park to try and monitor that because, you know, like there is a video. You can go on YouTube and watch this lady wipe her glass table out at 9 o'clock and by 10 o'clock go back out there and do the same thing. And there's just as much coal dust on there an hour later, you know, because the wind was perfect.
Well, we're coming to a quick, that was well said, thank you, coming to a quick close here. So would the two of you want to add anything for our listeners to know or to be aware of or whatever you'd like to say?
Well, I'd like to add that just because you don't live right next to the plant, you can be 4 or 5 miles away. The particles that you breathe, the further you get away from the plant, are the ones that are more hazardous because they're finer particles. So you may not see them, but you're still breathing them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Frank and Carol.
And I'd like to say again that with Foxconn, you know, moving into the area, and the coal production energy ramping up, you know, the threat is going to be almost doubled in the area, and this really can't be allowed to go forward as it is. And on the other hand, with clean energy, what you have are, you know, jobs that will last. Coal will run out eventually anyway, so would oil, so would gas. But the sunlight is there forever, and so is the wind, and so the jobs are there forever.
Okay, Charlie.
The only thing I want to wrap up, what I want to say is that basically we don't do something here. Southeastern Wisconsin is going to be an ecological disaster.
Mm-hmm.
It's going right down that road. You know, people need to get on board and help change these companies over to a better way to produce
energy.
Thank you guys so much. It's been so well stated here. I appreciate it. For our listeners, I'd like to share the words of the World Health Organization, which has written the following. This is globally. The health effects of inhalable particulate matter include respiratory and cardiovascular morbidity, such as aggravation of asthma, respiratory symptoms, an increase in hospital admission, and mortality from cardiovascular and respiratory.